very special edition of the NerdWatch podcast tonight. I, of course, am G Money. I'm glad to be with you guys this evening. I am with a bunch of comic book fans, comic book nerds, as it were. And some
I'm more of
them,
a dork.
Yeah, some of them familiar. Some of them may not be as familiar, but let me introduce them and our special guest of honor tonight. First of all, the man who is the author of Kukui Project, Disco Thunder Groovebone, and Hard Candy Aftermath.
He is the author, the artist, and all around decent
guy. Todd Bernardi's in the house this evening.
Thank you.
Yeah, Todd's in the house. Also joining us tonight, of course, is our gaming guru himself. Format is in the house with us this evening as well. The man who is the owner and proprietor of Maui Comics and Collectibles, who is responsible for bringing the guest of honor to the show tonight. Alika's in the house. Persuading him.
No, I didn't even persuade him, man. He's like
responsible for opening a comic store that he just happened to wander in.
Nice.
You're welcome.
Also joining us tonight is the second of Maui Comics and Collectibles henchmen. He is a comic book henchman in his own right. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the Rat Queens fan. Travis is in the house.
Is that where the podcast audience is supposed to clap?
Yeah.
They would seem like total psychos.
I'm like, if they give Swan stuff, I better get way more than he does.
We're going to add that in and post.
And last but certainly not least, our guest of honor this evening, ladies and gentlemen, the man who is the author of Peter Panzerfaust, the author of Rat Queens. Are you an artist at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Curtis Weeb.
Hey, what's up?
He's in the house. Yes. Yeah. There's a running joke that I...
I'm in prepared.
Alika, you should definitely tell...
No, we already told him.
Oh, you don't? The Scott McDowell thing?
That's why he sounded so fed up with you.
Yeah.
I hated you before I met you.
I appreciate your honesty.
Can I get you to write like a paragraph on a sketch paper? That'll cost you.
Yeah. Man, well, listen, Curtis, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, no problem.
You are all the way, you're visiting all the way from the Canadas, all the way down to Maui.
I'm sorry. I don't think you can say that.
Can't?
No.
All right.
From the Canadas?
The Canadas? I can't say that?
Canadidia.
Canadidia.
There you go.
Yes.
That sounds like
how are things in the Great White North, sir?
Things are fine, but I'm here, so that tells you something. I'm willing to risk being in America of some sort.
Gotcha.
Things in Canada are so good, I'm going to Trump's America.
That's good. That's good stuff. But Curtis,
the beach better be amazing.
Yeah. And it is.
It is. To be fair.
It is. When is, by the way, it is September.
Yeah.
When does it get cold for you guys? When is it toque-wearing weather?
Well, I recently moved from the West Coast to Vancouver last September, so I had my first winter in the BC interior, which is, I live about 4.5 hours inland in the mountains.
Wow.
Now in a town called Kelowna. And it starts to get cold around November, December.
Really?
So we're a little ways off yet.
Are you in a place where now it snows like
yeah,
mad
a lot.
Now?
It snowed like crazy. So everyone said, oh, it's pretty mild here. We get a little bit of snow. And it snowed like every day. And the worst part is that we bought a house up there, and the driveway, I'm not kidding, is 30 feet long on a hill. So I went out there, and I'm like, okay, you know, I grew up in the prairies of Canada, so it snowed there all the time. I was used to it, but I'd been away for a long time. Mm. And so I'm like, I have shoveled snow before. This isn't a big deal. And I was out there. I counted there. It was 2.5 hours of shoveling, just tons of snow, and that was not fun. So I bought a snowblower. I actually bought it this summer, and I looked like a crazy bull. The same day, there was a garage sale on my street. One guy was selling a snowblower. The other guy was selling a barbecue. And it was far enough, in my opinion, that you know I didn't want to have to like push the barbecue.
Right.
So first of all, about an hour earlier, to get the snowblower, you have to turn it on to make it move.
Right.
So it's like 35 degrees, which is probably about 96 Fahrenheit for you guys. And I'm pushing the snowblower that's running down the street, running. Right. And I'm new guy in town. People are like, what the hell is up with this guy?
Like, oh, he writes comic books.
Yeah. I get it. Moving the snowblower up my driveway.
That is
and then literally an hour later, I'm like, I tell my wife, I'm like, okay, well, I bought a barbecue, but don't want to push it. It's too far. So we get the car, and I sit in the back. It's like a SUV, so I open up the back trunk. And I sit in the back, and I'm dragging it behind as she drives down the road. She just, just rattling down the drive. The same guy saw me do both of them, and I'm sure he thinks I'm just the new lunatic in town. But anyway.
Was there any alcohol involved?
Surprisingly not. It was really bad life choices.
Really good life choices.
So another thing, I have to say that your English is phenomenal, especially from Canada.
Thank you.
Just want to let you know that. It's fantastic.
Your English is pretty good for being from Hawaii.
I just want to say we use the Queen's English, so the proper English.
Yes, you do. Absolutely right. So we should talk about you seriously for a moment here, Mr.
Sure.
Weeb. You grew up in the prairies of Canada, like you
That's
said.
Right.
What were the things that you were doing as a youngster that inspired you to do this? Where were you? Were you reading? Were you watching? What were the things that you were doing that really that took hold in you?
Man, that's a good question. Actually, I don't think I've ever had that question as far as like being related to where I grew up. That's interesting.
That's what we do here at the Nerd.
Yeah, I didn't expect to.
We ask the hard hitting questions. Yeah.
G
just feels so proud of himself for asking.
I just thought I was in for journalism.
He's just beaming right now.
I thought I was in for a night of jort questions. But
that's later. That's later.
Okay. I grew up on a farm actually for a long time. My dad was a farmer.
Oh, wow.
And up until I was about grade 7. And we moved into a nearby town, so I spent most of my time in town. But in the summers, we'd go back to farm. So up until I was like in grade 11 or grade 12, I was going to the farm every summer.
Expected to inherit the farm and do dad's work?
No. I remember one point I was like grade 10. I was like, Dad, this is like, I'm the laziest guy. Like, I'm the laziest guy on earth. There might be some people at this table that might...
First of all, I will compete with you for that title. But anyway.
Farming takes work. So I basically told my dad in grade 10, I was like, I think I want to take over the family farm. And he's like, no. So that just wasn't going to happen.
Normally, in the movies, it's like they put their hands on your shoulder.
Yeah, it's like you're looking over a wheat field. Yeah. Someday, son, will all be yours.
This will all be yours.
He's just like, son, this will never be yours. I'm going to sell it while I can. Go to school.
So,
I'm going to sell it before you demolish it.
So whatever you do, find a vocation.
Yeah. There's lots of moments like that with my dad.
So
but,
farming was out. And
farming
then that,
was out.
Then you're like, oh, comics.
Yeah, straight to comics. No, actually, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life at all. I didn't start doing it until I was probably 27. I did some like writing, mostly short stories, fan fiction stories, weirdly enough. And actually, I started submitting my stuff. Not submitting it, but there was a community on the Penny Arcade forums. They're still around, I think. But it was called the Writer's Block. And I used to go there and post my short stories there. And actually, that's the first time I met Pat Rothfuss. Was I told him to? We can't swear. Is that
no?
I will allow it.
Okay.
Well, he's Canadian, so it's like a foreign language.
Yeah. So you can say whatever the quote is.
So basically, I'm paraphrasing what I said, and it was basically like Pat Rothfuss, get the fuck out of here. And there was this funny thing that happened because he came on. He was like, this was before In the Name of the Wind came out. He was also just like being there as part of the community. And he came in as this outsider, right? And he started critiquing all these people's short stories. And like, there's a mode of operation here, man. Like, you can't just come in here and start critiquing people's stories. You haven't posted anything in here. Beat it, right? Like, get out of here. So I did. I told him to get out of the farm. We don't want him ever to come back. And then he became very popular and clearly was the most successful of any of us.
Clearly, your finger was on the pulse.
Yeah. You don't know anything about writing. But it's funny because that was about 2 years ago now, maybe a little bit longer than that. Pat Rothfuss tweeted something about Rat Queens. He said, you guys got to read Rat Queens. It's great. And I was like, oh, no.
So he remembers me.
Yeah, so there was this interesting conversation that I tweeted back and forth with him. I was like, hey, man, thanks so much for recommending my book. That's awesome of you. I don't know if you know this, but the first time we had interaction, I told you to fuck off. And he's like, really? This is a Twitter conversation we're having. I'm like, yeah, you came in and you were critiquing people, and I was being a bit of a dink, and I told you to fuck off. He's like, I don't know. He's like, it sounds like I probably was being a dick in that situation. It makes a lot of sense, actually. And then from there, we just kind of like, you know, kept in touch, and it was just this funny thing. But anyway, yeah, Patton Rothfuss on the Writers Block forums, Penny Arcade. So that's where I started practicing like writing short stories, and I had a couple different ideas that I wanted to do for like a novel, and a friend of mine was like, oh, like that story you just pitched me, that should be like a comic book. And I must have been like 25 at that time, and I was like, oh, I didn't read comic books at all. I read them growing up a little bit, but I really, really, my perception of comic books was superheroes, and I'm not a big superhero guy. It's not my thing. So he had bought me a bunch of comics for my birthday. He's like, well, you know, check these out. And it was like Walking Dead number 18, I think, and like a couple other like indies. And the first book that I went in, I was like, oh, these are really great. There's comic books that are not superheroes. I did not know that. And then I went in and got my first book on my pull list was Fell by Warren Ellis and Ben Templesmith. And that was it. That was like the game changer. And I was like, man, I want to do this. So I did. I just kind of started like writing scripts, going online to finding like resources. Right. And there wasn't a lot at that time to like, how do you do this? And so I just started like reaching out to artists online and trying to build pitches. And it kind of went from there. But no, I didn't have any idea what I wanted to do. I did all kinds of other side jobs. And I've been a bus driver. I did a bus driver in the city I live in for quite some time. I've like been a bellboy at a hotel. I've tried to sell life insurance.
Wait. Can I hear your pitch?
No, because I didn't last more than a day.
I didn't develop a pitch.
Yeah.
I didn't get that far.
Didn't get that far in the program.
Good, just checking.
I worked for an airline. Like, so I've done all kinds of stuff, and it literally just was a thing of kind of just happened. And wow. I pitched a bunch of times. My first series that not a lot of people know about, and would like to keep it that way.
Come on.
I did a series for Red 5 Comics, who their notable work was Atomic Robo. So that was kind of their breakout title. And then I got kind of through friend of a friend, knew some of the guys at Red 5, and I got my first book there called Beautiful Creatures. And I thought, man, that was like 2009. And I was like, man, that's my in. I'm going to make it now. Like, I'll, you know, it's all gravy from here. That didn't turn out that way.
Interesting. So for you, not being a superhero fan, you didn't read comics until later in life.
Yeah.
Now, for you, when you're going, man, I'm a good writer, where did that come from? Like, I'm just curious because, you know, it's not like everybody gets this bug and goes, hey, man, I should start writing these short stories or have you. Do you remember what that was? Were you reading something or were you
actually? I can say this about kind of the inspiration. I've always been into role playing games, and I think my natural kind of the natural way I do it is I always run the game. I never play it.
Oh.
In fact, I'm a fairly terrible player. If you want to confirm that, you can sometimes watch me on Twitch. I'm on a show called The Misclicks. I'm playing this half orc barbarian ranger named King, and I'm bad.
So you're a terrible player, but a good dungeon master.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But I think that's like the natural storytelling kind of came out.
Wow.
Like that. So
fascinating.
That's where I really got a love of storytelling, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Fascinating. So when you get this book, Beautiful Creatures, by the way, could you tell us a little bit about
No.
Okay.
Can Google it.
I don't know if you slyly knew that I tried to go back to that and then move forward to Beautiful Creatures again. How long did that last?
Smooth.
Beautiful Creatures. Yeah, it was.
Two issues. What,
who did the art?
Is a guy named Ash Jackson. And it actually, like, he's a great artist, actually. And then it had Frank Zigarelli did the colors for it. And who lettered that? I don't even remember. Did I? I don't think so. I don't remember. Anyway, it was just a two issue. It was a two issue double size. Like each issue was double size.
Right.
It was supposed to be a four issue thing, and then they just condensed it down to two. You know, it's not like, I mean, it's mostly embarrassing, but that's I think like what you know you're a writer and artist, like the earliest stuff that you do, it's like
you can see
kernels, I think, of like this is kind of where I was trying to go, but either you don't have the skill, or you don't have the technical know-how, or you're just not there yet.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what I can see the kernel. Weirdly, I can see the kernel of Rat Queens in that what I wanted to be able to do.
Right.
And I just wasn't there yet. I could if I tried Rat Queens back then, it would have been horrible.
So when you write, do you write when you were writing these beautiful creatures or whatever. Mm. Do you write it as a script, or do you write it like a novel, or how do you?
No, it's like a script. It's like a script. Page panel breakdown with descriptions for each panel.
Right.
I don't generally. Like when I work with.
Did you have to learn that? Because you said you were writing short stories. Did you have to learn how to do that?
Yeah, I actually learned about that from the Dark Horse website. They had a submission guideline about how the script should be laid out, and I just. That's all I could find. Like, how do people write comics? It's the only thing I could find. And I actually still use that format to today.
Wow. Sweet. Todd, did you read that? Did you know about it?
Yeah, no, I've been on the Dark Horse submission. They also make you sign a form saying that, like, you can't sue them later if they publish anything. Similar to your submission.
Wow.
Which, I mean, sometimes is pretty standard. But the format that I use is from the Will Eisner book. Because he talks about the scripts that he would do for Spirit.
Mm.
And then that was something to keep everybody sort of on task.
Well,
the people that were either going to lay it out, so he was going to pencil it or ink it after him and then letter it, you know.
The reason why I went to Todd on that was because Todd is a writer and an artist.
Right.
And when you pull double duty like that, does it, when you see the art for what you're writing, do you become either inspired or irritated by the fact that, look, this is not what I wanted, or this is exactly what I was had in my mind? Or
I think the longer you do it, the less, like, I don't like to dictate too much to the artist. I feel like, you know, there should be a true partnership between both. And I think I think it was Kieran Gillen was on a panel with him a few years ago, and he basically said, "My job is to simply inspire the artist." And I thought that was pretty cool. I think that's
who said that?
Kieran Gillen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
he does
Wicked Divine.
Wicked Divine.
And they did Secret Avengers. Was it Secret Avengers? The Young Avengers was kind of their big Marvel thing. But yeah. Anyway, I thought
he's British, right?
Yeah, he's British. Yeah, and I thought that was a really good piece of advice or a way to look at it. And so that's kind of how I like to treat it, is like I'm there just to, like, so that they get the ideas, and so really I'm just like putting the ideas forward, and they're the camera that brings it to life.
So you're not like you're not precious as
no
oh, okay.
And in fact, I feel like it's in Peter Panzerfels in particular, there's a sequence in, I think it's issue 24, it's like a 17 page action sequence. And what I did is I drew a map for Tyler, and I just showed kind of the flow of the battle and like where each location was, and I just kind of on each page would just be like, you know, the machine gun fires here, and then this needs to happen. Normally you'd have like a panel by panel breakdown, but right. I was just like, literally it was 17 pages of just light, just like the flow of the battle,
right.
And then I just let him do everything, and then I wrote everything afterwards on top of whatever he had drawn.
Now that you've even pulled ahead of me, because that was my next question, was Peter Panzerfaust. After the two-issue run of Beautiful Creatures, when did we start looking into other stories? Or did you say that this is what you wanted to do, or did they say, "Hey, Curtis, we need you to work on something"?
No, it's all like creator-owned. So it's titles that I've created with an artist, and it's our kind of own creation. So after Beautiful Creatures, there was like a year and a half. The book got decent reviews. And then I was like, yeah, I thought the next book would be so much easier, and it wasn't. It basically, like, there was nothing at all for like a year and a half, and I was putting pitches together and getting rejections all over.
Right.
So I basically just like gave up, and I was like, I can't, this is stupid. Like, I'm not gonna,
right.
I can't waste time and money. I was paying artists to do the pitches, and I'm like, I was broke. I was driving a bus at the, was I driving a bus? I think I just got that job, but the job before that, I was barely making ends meet, and I'm like, I can't afford to pay somebody. So I was like, I'm going to do one last thing. We put me and artist Scott Kowalczyk, who I did a book called The Intrepids, that was my first book. We put the pitch together, and like, let's just go to Emerald City Comic Con. I think it was 2010, and I was just like, let's just pitch and see what happens. And I'd basically given up at that point. I was like, this is stupid. And so we went, we pitched, and then 2 months later, we heard back from Image, and they're like, yeah, we'll do the book. It's like, holy crap. Like, and that was kind of like, that was, we pitched, they were the top. Like, that was the one. We pitched to a couple others, like Oni, and there was a couple others there around at the time, Top Shelf, I think we pitched to. And we were like, because they were smaller, we're like, maybe that'll be the one. And then, like, when Image took it, we're like, holy crap, can't believe it. And then 6 months later, while we were working on The Intrepids, a friend of mine, Riley Rosmo, if you guys know who that is, he's doing Batman right now. He's also done a ton of creator-owned stuff. He's amazing. He was like, we're looking for backups, and he was doing an image book at the time called Proof. He's like, we're looking for like 3 to 4 page backup stories, and I want you to write them, and I'll draw them, and we'll just put them in the back of the book. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And I started developing this world, and I was like, this is really cool. And he read kind of the concept for what I wanted to do, and he's like, man, we should just make a full comic of that. So we did, and that was Green Wake, and that was my second book, which is what that tattoo is from. And
which you can't see on the pod, by the way, but it's a stunning tattoo.
It's a frog skeleton, which Green Wake is there's a very heavy like frog motif in it, which has to do with regeneration, rebirth, and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, so then like literally my first real foray into comics was Intrepid's in Green Wake, and they came out a month apart. And it was just, it's kind of gone from there.
Now, how long did Intrepid's last?
That was 6 issues.
6 issues, and yeah. Green Wake was?
Green Wake was 10.
Was 10 issues?
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, it seemed hard, right,
yeah.
for you to, you know, you're about ready to
yeah.
drop this whole comic
yeah.
book nonsense. How was the process for you when you started going, you know, you have 6 issues to do, you have 10 issues to do, what... How did that change your perception of how you were doing the work, or change your perception about how, man, this is going to, I think I'm really getting into this now?
It didn't really ever get easier. It was maybe easier to like find new getting published and stuff.
Gee, but writing is really hard.
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, like.
Well, especially in, so there, I think there's a weird misconception about comics. So when you work for Marvel or DC, you get paid.
Todd, shut up. Okay, go ahead.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
I mean, that's a very true statement.
Yeah,
I'm sure you were.
So when you work for them, you get paid. When you do stuff for Image,
mm-hmm.
you don't get paid. You don't get paid a page rate. You don't get paid in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people may do, but like. It really depends, I guess, on the deal that they... But most people, especially when I came up, there wasn't anything like that. And so you make money on the back end. What that means is after your print is covered,
right.
after Image takes their fee for, like, promoting the book and whatever, whatever's left over is what you get.
Right.
So on Intrepid's, I think I made, for the entire run, about $200.
Wow.
So that was
wow.
6 months of work. Right?
Right.
And you know what? For me, that's fine, because as a writer, it is easier. However, for Scott, who basically was doing a month per issue, he's making $100 a month.
Oof.
So there's... And we had a similar thing on Peter Panzerfaust. Peter Panzerfaust did decently well at the beginning, but then as time... And generally, that's the way it goes. As time goes on, sales slowly... drop.
Decline,
it's just
right.
the way it goes.
Right.
We had to take a hiatus because mm-hmm. Tyler had to take other work, and a lot of people were really pissed at us. They just thought we just dropped it.
Was that the third? Was that the third book? Was Peter
I think it was the
third?
Fifth.
The fifth. Okay.
Yeah. Which is really frustrating because I think people just assume, oh, they just got lazy and they just didn't want to finish the book. And it's like Tyler had to feed his goddamn family. Mm-hmm. You know, like he had to pay his bills. He had to take other work, and so the reason Peter Panzerfaust finished is because I paid him a page rate to do it.
Wow.
You know, otherwise it wouldn't happen because, like, he's got 3 kids, you know, so we wanted so badly to finish that book, but we just financially couldn't do it.
Right.
And then, you know, enough time passed that we were able to. So that's kind of the tough thing about it is, like, you're kind of like, you want to do it because, like, this is amazing. It's the dream job, but it's not really a job for quite some time. It's hard. It's hard to make money in indie comics.
Right. And that's why I have such respect for the man sitting next to me, Todd, because he writes and he draws it and he inks it and he does.
I pay myself a terrible page.
I wouldn't work for him because it is a terrible page.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm, you know, when I talk
that's
to
why
him,
I have to draw it.
So when I talk to guys that are just writers,
yeah.
or talk to guys that are just artists, I'm like, man, I mean, and the way that I keep doing these interviews, I find out like it's so much work on both ends, and I'm like, you get more respect for people that do it all. It's like,
yeah.
I don't even know how you handle that.
Yeah, I think you could probably speak to this. Like, there's probably pros and cons to both, right?
Yeah.
Like, for you, when you write and draw, what are some things that you find are better than having to work with somebody else?
Listen, Curtis. I'll do the interview.
I overwrite. Like, I'm an idiot when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, I write myself into a corner. I write about stuff that I've got no idea how to draw. So I have to do a lot of reference, like, research. Mm. And then I'm constantly rewriting up until I send it off to the printer. So, and that's mostly because I have to fit it in there with the art. And I've gotten a lot better at it.
Yeah.
As time goes on. So that's kind of the big thing. When I work with other artists, I've been writing something for a friend of mine. I try to keep it as sparse as possible.
Yeah.
I want it to be descriptive enough to where he knows what he knows what he wants to do, you know? You know, if he thinks that it should be a different angle or whatever, like, I'm not precious about any of that.
Yeah. Either.
So it's, I mean, but for, like, the, you know, the actual, like, meat and potatoes of sitting down and at the board and drawing it, like, it just kind of, I sort of write it and lay it out at the same time, and then draw it, and then rewrite it, and then letter it, and then rewrite it.
I'll see you even do your own lettering too.
Yeah.
Well, wow. He has to now.
Yeah, he made his
wife do it before.
My wife was doing it, and she was like, I quit.
She was like, actually.
She was like, after issue 4, she was like, just hire somebody else. And yeah. I was like, no, I'll just figure out InDesign.
So, see, that's what I mean. Like, before, you know, being a nerd, sometimes, you know, everything is from the outside in.
Yeah.
So, when I started to, you know, pick your guys' brains from, you know, from Michelinie and you and Scott Lobdell and Chris Claremont and all those guys, thinking to myself, I always thought, like, hey, the writer just writes this, he submits it,
yeah,
and then he's good.
That does happen.
It happens at Marvel a lot. I mean, you got an editor that's going to be like, no, this isn't good, and then sends it back to you, or is like, yeah, this is great, and then gives it to the artist.
And it seems like, yeah, and the more and more I do these and talking to you, it's like, this collaboration thing is a real thing. Like,
yeah,
you have to do this.
I firmly believe it has to be an independent comics. You can't, you know, there are some people that do that, like, they hire an mm-hmm. artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like doing that. I like to co-own it, first of all, so we own the rights to whatever we create 50-50.
Sure.
And I like to have the artist have, like, an equal, like, for the ideas and,
right,
like, what do you want to draw?
Right.
What do you want to do with the story? For me, that's absolutely the best part. You want like, both of you to be equally invested.
Right,
and if you're
right,
just like, oh, here's $100 a page, just right, draw my script, then it's just impersonal, informal, and there's not, like, this mutual, like, I feel, that's my opinion, that it's, you know, I think if they're invested with it, where they have an equal stake,
right,
then it's something that they will equally put their heart into.
Right. So, for you, we should definitely start talking about your, I don't want to say your more notable comics. Mm. Let's why don't we start with Peter Panzerfaust, of
sure,
course. Where did the inspiration for that come from? Where did the, what was the idea behind Peter Panzerfaust? And then, of course, the reason why these other guys are here is because of Rat Queens, which we'll talk about later.
I'm here to find about his fan fiction now.
But
it gets real weird.
Peter Panzerfaust, I'm guessing, was one of those where you actually was. Well, or I'm assuming this was it. Was a taste of fame coming with Peter Panzerfaust, or was that before?
No, I mean, I don't. I still don't think I've tasted fame, which I'm fine with. That's the last thing I would ever want to be.
Well, I mean, fame. I mean, famous
success.
Even
among,
success. Yeah. I should say. Excuse me. Yes.
No, my stuff was all still pretty small. That up till, like, Peter Panzerfaust was probably the one that maybe got a bit talked about, but I don't think it was necessarily for the work. It was more because it was like it was hot in the speculator market, which ultimately killed the book, to be honest. But anyway, well, that's another story.
Thank God Alika is not sitting here.
We should get into that story.
He talks about that all the time, man. Did you see? You know, when I was growing up, you know.
Was it?
So, you brought him out, man.
So the speculation was driving the early sales of the book.
Yeah. So what happened was, after the first issue came out, mm-hmm, actually, I think it was around issue 5 that there was an announcement that the BBC had optioned it. and
oh, your work. They optioned your book.
Yeah, they optioned Peter Panzer Felsen.
Wow.
So issue one went as high as $1,000 US.
It was a crazy hype book.
Yeah.
That it really exploded.
Yeah. So I remember we went to C2E2 in Chicago. And at this, I don't really like telling the story too much, but that show was so crazy that I had just started dating my wife then, and I sent her a picture of the money I made at that show, and I covered my bed in money. She covered it. That was before we were really together. It was just kind of seeing each other at that point. That sold the deal.
And I was going to say that
she put a ring on it.
Yeah. Yeah. She did put a ring on it. I got it.
But that was how crazy. Like people were spending so much money on like everything that we had. They would line up, and after a while, because I don't ever charge for signatures, except I did on that book, because it was actually crushing, to be honest. Like people would bring up a stack of 100,
yeah,
and it was just your machine one after another. And so when I saw people come up with like that stack, I'm like, no, I'm gonna charge $5 a book, and I raked in money on that. But it actually, what happened was, is because then all of a sudden the stores were like, okay, why does everyone want this book? They were way increasing their orders, but it was only speculators that were buying the book. No one was reading it. So when the speculator market cooled, and there was basically stores were left with like, well, you're a store owner, so you would know if all of a sudden you were left with 30 copies of something and nobody was buying it, what do? You stop ordering it. And that's what happened. We went from, I think, and now Peter Panzer was like, I think our first issue sold like, was it like maybe 9,000 copies? And then on average, we were selling about 5, which is just enough maybe to keep the book going for a while. But then it went up to 15,000. So it tripled from where our kind of our average sales point
was.
Right. And then it just went, it crashed. I think we ended at like 2,000. You're not even making anything. That was around issue 20. We weren't making anything anymore. So it really was. It was the speculator market that, because stores were like, we're not going to order this book anymore. No one's buying it. So we had zero sales.
What year was this?
2013 or 14.
That was right before the store opened. So the only Peter Panzer Faust that we actually carried on the rack was 24 and 25.
Yeah. Because we came back. We took a year, over a year and a half off, because we couldn't do it anymore.
Okay, so the first...
About the option with the... Sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
Did the option revert back to you eventually from the BBC, or are they still trying to make it?
Yeah, it's reverted back to us. And I'm trying to pivot the project a little bit. I would actually love to write it as a TV show, but instead of starring as Peter as the hero, have Tiger Lily be the main character and have like this young romance story. They're like her and Julian's story. I'd love to do that, and then Peter is like this kind of character that is in the background, but he's not like the forefront. But yeah, it's been reverted back to us, and I'm very proud of that series. I think it's actually a very beautiful series.
For those that are listening that may not be interested in Peter Panzerfaust, could you give us a little synopsis?
So Peter Panzerfaust is the it's actually the Peter Pan story, kind of loosely. It's the Peter Pan concept thrown into World War II France, where Peter and the Lost Boys are French resistance fighters in World War II, and Captain Hook is a Nazi SS officer and who's hunting the resistance. And so it's basically a war story about kids growing up during a time of war and becoming involved in the war. And it's funny because we originally, Tyler and I had every intention to make it like an Indiana Jones style like adventure story, but as I was writing it, I'm like, this is a deeply sad concept, right? Like this, like how can I write this fun adventure story where teenagers are actively having their like killing and being killed,
right?
And it just turned into this story about like growing up and loving people through such a horrible time, and what that actually means throughout someone's lifetime. Because the whole thing is the whole premise is every arc, every 5 issues is a guy going and interviewing one of the Lost Boys when they're old men, and getting their perspective on who Peter was. This interviewer is trying to find out who Peter was through the stories of the people that lived with him.
Right.
So yeah, it just turned into this really tragic story, and I'm super proud of it. I still think it might be the best stuff I've ever done.
Now, I mean, obviously, when you write comics like that, it's not a superhero comic, so these are always tougher sells. But I mean, for you, for that to get, for that to take off like it did, was this the second crash? for comics back then, or was there? Was it the first one was right
Peter
after?
Panzerfaust was recent.
No, that's what I'm saying. But the first one was, of course, the big one.
The '90s and late 2000s.
Right.
So yeah, that was all one crash.
That was one huge one, right? Yeah. So would we consider
it's it crashed in '96 and then just kept
it was depressed, like, the whole time. Right, and it actually gave space for all the independents to, you know, kind of come to life
shine.
That time.
Establish market share.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So now Peter Panzerfaust was big, and then all of a sudden would it be fair to say, no pun intended, it tanked, right? That's exactly right.
Yeah. You're looking for permission to talk trash.
Yeah. I mean, well, of course, Panzerfaust. So
I would say that's a...
Oh, tank. That's a pun. Yeah.
That's a, wow. So I said no pun intended.
Well done, G. Yeah, you got one.
Thank you. That's why I host the show.
Whoever writes your material.
So Peter Panzerfaust, when we come to the end of that run, and because of what had happened, were you in a different state when it came to your next project, or were you like, man, I gotta cool off for a bit, or how'd that go?
I don't know. Like, I'd already started doing Rat Queens at that time, and it's funny, because that book I thought would be... we would get 5 issues if we were lucky. And I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating at all when I say I thought Rat Queens would be like flash in a pan and over.
So you were doing Rat Queens while you were doing Peter Panzerfaust.
Yeah.
Okay, and when did you start doing Rat Queens?
It came out in 2013.
Okay, so right at the tail end of...
It was kind of in between. I was doing both for a little while, and we took a break on Panzerfaust. I don't remember the timelines, to be honest. I think we took a break on Panzerfaust starting in 2015, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right. So yeah, I was doing both for a little while, and but yeah, I just... Rat Queens wasn't even a thing, like, oh, I need a break from like serious stuff or anything like that. It was just like, oh, I have this idea for a stupid fantasy series, and then it just grew, and then it became the thing I was working on.
Right.
And it's funny, if you look at my history as a writer, Rat Queens is the last thing you'd expect to see from me. I do a lot of like really, I get like psychological horror, and I like to deal, like, obviously with Peter Panzerfaust, I like to deal with like really heavy themes of loss and tragedy. Yeah. And then I did this funny fantasy book, and that's like just the one. That's the one, right?
Right.
That's the one that has made my career.
The least unexpected of the.
I never expected it, especially because, you know, going into. At the time, there was nothing like fantasy. Like, there's of course a few fantasy books, but like they traditionally don't do very well.
Right,
you're right. They're not,
even the popular ones weren't.
Yeah,
like Elf Lord or, you know,
Elfquest.
What are those?
Elfquest.
Yeah, they were popular with the people who liked them. But
exactly,
they were not big sellers.
And I think the only one at the time that was out was Skull Kickers, which was a Jim Zub and Edwin Hwang book, and
which was a webcomic first, if I remember right.
I believe so. Yeah, I think you're right. And then they turned it into, it was a comic image, and it didn't, like, the singles didn't sell great.
So when you get to that, I mean, when you're starting to do Rat Queens, when do you go, oh man, this is gonna, because obviously when you're at that time, you're like, man, this is gonna sell, and you're like, this idea is gonna sell. Are you at that point where you're like, I know I can sell this book, I know that, you know, or were you just like, and just this was an inspiration for you, like, I got to get this on the paper?
No, I didn't think Rat Queens was gonna sell at all. I thought it was gonna, like, that was the thing, like, looking at, like, you know, I mentioned Skull Kickers, it was, that book didn't, it did pretty well in trades, but the singles were like, you know, not great, and I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do a fantasy book. Like, there's no reason for me. I just wanted to do it. And so we originally were going to kickstart it, and we had the Kickstarter, was like, we were done. We were ready to launch it. And the original title, do you guys want to know the original title of Rat Queens?
Of course. Is it a Nerdwatch exclusive?
No.
Jesus.
I've told some other people.
Oh, man. Okay.
But the original title of Rat Queens was Pussy Rats.
I like the original title better.
I wonder why you changed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would have worked on Kickstarter because, you know, it would have been, you wouldn't have to hide it on the shelves. You know, it was just like a straight to the customer. But so basically, last minute, I pitched it to Jim Valentino at Image Shadowline, and I honestly thought he'd be like, no, by all means, no. And he liked it. And then 2 hours later, he's like, yeah, let's do it. So.
And you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You're like, you, do you,
reminds me of a girl.
I like that. Like, you talk to motherfucker. Are you serious?
Yeah. And I was miraculous. I was like, oh, okay. So we just started working on it. And then, yeah, and then it, and even when it came out, like our early order numbers, but this is also like, it came out right when Image was just starting to like, everything that they were doing, people were like going crazy for. Saga really started it all.
Walking Dead.
Well, I mean, Walking Dead was, but that wasn't trickling down to other books. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't, that was more the TV stuff, and there wasn't trickle down from Walking Dead. Walking Dead has been its own thing for a long time, but there was this excitement that was coming out of Image with this new wave of like a lot of people that left Image and DC were coming to do Image titles. So it was just kind of this like time. But even in that group, we were like, nobody was talking about our book when it came out. Like, everyone was talking about Sex Criminals. That was the book everyone was talking about.
That.
We came out the same week as them, and nobody was talking about our book. And we just kind of came in, and nobody really talked about it. And then a month passed.
Joe Casey did Sex, too.
Yeah,
at the
Joe
same
Casey.
Time.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of, like, kind of the, like, people who were already known for their work were doing stuff at the same time, and I wasn't really known.
Was that when Lemire was doing Descender? Did he start Descender then?
No, Descender was like only a year and a half ago, I think. This was like 2013. I'm trying to think what else came around that time.
You're saying something about Saga. I'm guessing that one has just been kicking off around then?
Yeah, I think Saga came out in January of that year. Or maybe it was like March or something like that.
Did you think about changing the name of the book after you saw that you had all of these very different, diverse titles?
Like, sex, I mean, criminals, sex rats.
Right. that's exactly rats. What I'm thinking. Like, sex queens totally would sell that book.
Yeah.
You know, rat criminals. Ooh.
Sex.
Yeah. That's it.
Sexy sex.
Yeah, yeah, the second title was Penis in the Vagina.
I would buy that
as well. A little too on the nose.
So, Rat Queens, for you, for everybody that's listening to Curtis Weeb, Rat Queens is your most recent book. What you say it's a fantasy series.
Yep.
What's the story? What's the synopsis around that?
It's essentially about four adventurers in like a high fantasy setting that go out and kill monsters. That's a basic premise. But I've heard someone describe it as Lord of the Rings is done by Quentin Tarantino. I thought that was pretty cool. But it's basically like the characters talk like modern day. What I really kind of annoys me with high fantasy stuff is that they all speak.
Forsooth.
Well, even yeah, like they all speak in a way that it's like it's the typical. This is how high fantasy is.
Oh, you mean the Queen's English there? Curtis Weeb?
Yeah, essentially.
The J.R.R. Tolkien stuff has got a lot of like other linguistic things.
Well, yeah,
yeah. They
created languages.
Yeah, he was a linguist. That's what he taught.
Exactly,
so.
And so there's a certain cadence, I guess, that people expect with high fantasy, and it's also like everything is like medieval European, and I was just like, man, why does it always have to be that way? So I wanted to do something that was like, I want it to be a high fantasy series where the four main characters are like college age girls. Like, what would they be? What would like four college age girls be like in a high fantasy setting? That's essentially like where the idea came from. And
sounds hot.
Yeah. Well, that's why I just.
Well, that's why it's called Pussy Rats.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Which is now what we'll address it as.
Yeah.
In any scenario.
Yeah. So, that's all I'm going to pitch you at the shop now.
Yeah, yeah. That's how you're going to do it.
How's your
subscription?
It used to be a lot better until we started calling it that.
So, with a book as with the unlikely success of Rat Queens, for your books like this, a majority of artists and or writers always have an end game, or you know, guys like George R.R. Martin,
right,
who apparently has an end game for Thrones.
Right.
Does Rat Queens have a finality to it, or do you know how many issues you're going to be doing?
I don't know how many issues, but I know how it ends, and I know. The idea, the whole concept of Rat Queens is that Rat Queens is a place that people who don't fit in where they come from can find family and find home. And so the idea of the Rat Queens itself is that the Rat Queens is not necessarily the four girls that create the band of the Rat Queens. The Rat Queens is more of an idea that you can stay there a while until you figure out who you are or until you don't need it anymore. And then you find your own way, and it's basically it's like a place for lost people to find some comfort and to stay a while, to sit a spell, essentially. So the idea is that like over time the Rat Queens won't always be what you see them as, like, the current group of the four characters that are in it now. It'll be like, you know, someone finds a calling or finds a true purpose in their life, and off they go.
Would you mind sharing the finale with us here?
You know.
Don't laugh.
Well,
they changed their name back to Pussy
Queens.
Pussy Queens.
Yeah.
Pussy Queens, yes.
It basically involves a massive battle and jorts, and I don't know what else to say.
I'm in. All right. I am in. Yes. So you don't know how many issues you're going to be doing,
no.
But the art on these books are amazing.
Yeah.
Your collaborator, as it were,
my
your artist.
Yes.
Are you doing the lettering in any of the?
I've had Ed Brisson originally lettered Rat Queens, but that guy's kind of recently been just exploding at Marvel, which is amazing and awesome. I'm really happy for him. He's been, like, working his ass off in indie comics for, like, 20 years. And he's been doing crazy awesome crime books, just, like, self-publishing. They're called Murder Book. And they're awesome. And a lot of talent has come out of those. And it's funny because, like, not a lot of people know about Murder Book, but it's, like, Mike Walsh, who's a massive artist at Marvel. That's where he started. And pretty much everyone that's worked with Ed is now, like, a superstar at Marvel. And so now he's finally getting his due. So he was a letterer on Rat Queens for a while. And then when we came back with, we relaunched Rat Queens this year with a new artist. And we have a new letterer, Ryan Ferrier, who came on to do it. And the new artist, Owen Jenny.
Well, see, Todd, superstars at Marvel. You see, you hear that?
You just got to work with that.
Yeah. Marvel rules.
I get made fun of because I'm not a I'm
he hates Marvel.
I don't hate Marvel, but I'm also
diversity.
Not a superhero guy,
yeah.
And I'm not. And so I think that for every person that, like, buys a Spider-Man comic, they should, like, at least check out Rat Queens or Saga or something like that. You know,
I agree. Not just because it's Rat Queens, but I think, like, it's weird because a lot of people don't step outside of that. They like I did, you know, years ago, had no clue that there was other stuff out there. And I think it's, you know, there should be, like, a nice balance. Like, superheroes can be fun and whatever, but, like, you're going to kind of get the same stories over and over again. Where I feel like...
How dare you?
I know. Well, let's be honest here.
Come on. Have you seen any Marvel movies that were different from the previous Marvel movie?
Man! All right. Point
that
taken.
That sounds fair.
What? Why not? Why is that?
There's
only so many cameras to go around.
I just kind of jumped off that train. I stopped going to the movies, the Marvel movies. I watched Doctor Strange when I was building miniatures because I was like, I can do both because I'm sure they're both. Doctor Strange was just, I was like, what is going on? This is so dumb. It's like,
Doctor Strange and Guardians, like the volume two, like they
I
both,
didn't see that one.
They both, like, at the end, the main character punches a planet. Like, it's like that sounds
good.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Not only do you and Todd share beards, but also share ideas.
Well, so it's, yeah. I don't want people to think that, like, I would dislike them for being Marvel fans. Like, I've had people buy multiple copies of my comics that are huge
at
Marvel
least I
fans.
Know my beard's not making me pretentious.
Jeez.
It's my back tattoo that does that for me.
I didn't know those made people pretentious.
Wait. It's my lower back tattoo.
I was going to say, do you have a tramp stamp? Is that what you're confessing here on the show?
It's an exclusive for you guys' show.
I'm getting one done tomorrow.
So it's an interesting point that you bring up about, you know, I think Todd does have a point. I mean, if you're picking up a Spider-Man, feel free to pick up something like Rat Queens.
Not allowed.
Not in my store. But my question
Marvel
is this
only.
Then. If that is it, we're drawn to those superheroes because of
They're constantly being thrown in your face.
They are, but I mean, as a guy who didn't have it thrown in my face. I mean, my dad bought me my first comic books, but like,
did he throw them in your face?
Yeah. Get out of my face, kid. Read these.
Superman and Batman. Now, get out of here. Captain America.
No, but
go.
there's something about Superman that inspires. There's something about Batman where you want to be him. There's something about Spider-Man where you think that this rambunctious kid could be you.
It's called a soundtrack.
Yeah, well, how do you, as an independent writer, and I guess this is for both of you guys, an independent writer and artist, how do you draw those kinds of people in to your work when they are looking for...
How do you get me to read the book? without them wearing underwear on the outside.
That's true.
Have you seen Rat Queen? There are a lot of times where it's nothing but underwear.
My shorts are the underpants on the outside that you can wear like normal clothes.
Well, I'm just kind of curious because you know, these are. I mean, I know they're established heroes, but I mean, the reason why we like them so much is because of their character.
Do you like comics?
I do like comics.
Would you like to look at my comic?
I have looked at it. Okay. I haven't read it.
Stop asking.
But I've looked at it.
But that's how I get people interested.
To come in.
I mean, yeah. Right. Like, I think
I have a big question on the phenomenon of, like, you know, D&D, how we were kind of talking about that earlier, and Rat Queens. It's like, what, because, to be honest, I wasn't a D&D player, so I don't really understand it from, you know, how the phenomenon has been blowing up and more people have been coming into D&D and that kind of role-playing games and hobbies. Do you think the popularity of Rat Queens helped to feed that, or that Rat Queens is popular because the role-playing games are becoming more popular, or are they, you know, are they helping each other out?
It's interesting because the way you talk, Kurt, is it sounds like that your time as a DM, your dungeon master, sounds like that inspired some of the writings in Rat
there
Queens. Is that
like,
fair?
It's definitely, there's definitely that. And I think one of my goals with Rat Queens was to never make the humor something that only gamers would understand, because that's gamer humor is
it's like Penny Arcade.
Don't get me started, they're a bunch of freaking nerds.
Yeah
exactly.
Like when Travis tells a joke, I'm just like, what? what was that referencing?
It's not that's the thing, you have to understand the reference, and I never wanted the comedy to rely on people, the inside joke. I didn't want it to be an inside joke. I wanted the comedy to hit for everyone. And if you were a gamer, it would hit that just a little bit more, right?
Sure.
That was always how I wanted the comedy to be in the book. So, yeah, there's definitely role-playing game influence in there. You know, it's some of my... I jab a little bit at the, like, with some of the silliness of high fantasy, or I jab a little, you know, a few jokes here or there at, like, role-playing games. But I don't know. As far as, like, I don't think it had anything to do with D&D coming back. I just...
Because it happened kind of quickly, and
it did happen
in the same time period that Rat Queens began existing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was it...
I mean, I will take that credit if you'll give it to me, but...
I don't think Game of Thrones, it's Sex and Dragons.
I may have a back tattoo, but I'm not that pretentious to claim that I brought back D&D into popular
fourth edition.
No, that's it. He is the George R.R. Martin of the comic book world. I got it. No, I get it. I totally get it now.
Apparently, he reads Rat Queens. I heard that from a comic book.
Yeah,
apparently. That's awesome.
Oh. I heard that from a comic bookstore. He lives in Arizona.
New Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah. And, sorry. Don't. Yeah. It's New Mexico.
I've met him. I've met him in New Mexico. That's how I know.
Yeah. He's from New Mexico.
I'm not.
They roomed together once.
Yeah. You should hear those stories.
No.
But he's got soft hands.
He's very gentle.
And a very soft.
So
beard.
Wait a minute. How did he get it? I mean, obviously, did you send him a copy? Or
No. I saw a post online that a store owner. Someone went into a store in New Mexico and just asking for what was good. They like comedies and they like fantasy books and like what could they read, and they said, oh, here's Rat Queens. It's like, well, how do they say it? Like, George R.R. Martin reads it, so should you. I guess that was the store that he went to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
That's pretty cool.
So, if we see in the next season of Game of Thrones on HBO four women monster hunting,
college age,
with their clothes on,
with their clothes on,
for once,
we know where it's from. Yeah. Damn him, damn Martin. Well, anyway, listen, we're almost out of time, but I'd like to open the floor to everybody. If there's a question you'd like to ask Mr. Weeb, you're more than feel free to do so.
As long as it's not about my back tattoo.
But you are going to show us after, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Nice. That's why I didn't want this to be broadcast on video.
Okay, good. Well, just as long as we do that. As long as you get to see it after the show. Travis, you're sitting in on the pod. It seems like you have a couple of questions for Mr. Weeb.
I would appreciate Travis's point of view just because he's a gamer and a Rat Queens fan as well.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about the crossover between the games.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, it's a good crossover. It's kind of a gateway thing. It's like, do you enjoy this? You might actually enjoy rolling dice and having fun with it. It's scripted stories. It's fantastic. I enjoy the fact that you got Patrick Rothfuss write a short story for you, even though you told him
he was a dick earlier in the podcast.
That's true.
How dare you be a dick? Hey, you wrote a story. Can I publish it?
Yeah, that was kind of a funny thing. That was he basically was doing a fundraiser. He does this World Builders fundraiser. I think they do it twice a year. And it's like this really great program, and they have a lot of like nerd kind of related stuff, comics and board games and video games, all that kind of stuff, all these different types of things that, you know, you can donate and get all these kinds of prizes. But his was that basically once they reached like a stretch goal, basically for the fundraiser, he would write a backup story for Rat Queens, and that just it worked out. They got the stretch goal, and he did the story, and it was really awesome. But yeah, he's been really good. He's been a good support of the book and me too. Him and his company took on our merchandising for the clothing line that my wife started a few years ago and just could never keep it going because she didn't have enough money to buy the amount of stuff she needed to keep the store stocked. And so they just came in and said, we'll handle all that. So she still does like works with them for designs and stuff. So yeah, he's a really good dude.
Wow, that's awesome.
He Fantastic. Does all the, and you know, it's a lot, the proceeds go to his charity and yeah. Anyway, that was a really cool connection to have. It was weird cause we had that exchange online about like, hey, I treated you like an asshole. He's like, I probably was one. And then
I told these guys 1,000 times, being a dick gets you everything.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But he was at Emerald City Comic Con, not this year, but the year before. And it was just kind of a thing where he was like, I just tweeted at him, just a private message that, hey, I'm going to be at the con. Do you want to get together? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll try to squeeze in. Like, we'll get a coffee or something. And we went for coffee, and it was literally a 3-hour. And I'm like, oh crap, I gotta go. But we're sitting there talking. We're talking about like the charities that he's doing, and then we talk about the clothing. And he's like, oh, we'll do that for you. He's like, oh, by the way, we've got this new game. And then he pulled up this game. It was like, what is TAC?
It's TAC, yeah. TAC,
so he's like, we'll play
fun.
A game of TAC. And I was like, okay, sure. So we sat and played his new demo game, and it was like, crazy. So that was really cool.
Yeah, TAC came from his books. He's like, I didn't think it could be a real game.
It's a great game. It's really
complex.
Developed
the game for him. It's super complex, super simple.
Yeah, he beat my ass, but you know, it's only fair.
Well, it's his game.
It's actually not his game. It's based off the idea of his game.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I forget the name of the game designer who actually went like, no, here, let me take this.
The guy who does all the cheap ass games, I think they're called. The designer.
Oh, is it? So, any other questions from the peanut gallery or the pan? I should say. Anything else you'd like to broach to Mr. Weeb? Because I got a couple more questions.
What are you working on? Do you have any other projects lined up after Rack?
Damn it, he took one of mine.
Good, two of them. tired. I got a bottle of whiskey waiting for me.
Oh man!
There
we go.
We can get a bottle and keep this podcast going.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. I got to drive an hour.
We have an Uber driver here for you.
Oh, hey.
Uber,
so, yeah. So one thing that I'm working on right now besides Rat Queens is Gears of War, which was announced this summer, and I'm writing the series for that. I finished the first issue before I came on holidays because they gave me 2 weeks to do it.
So are you writing this as a comic, or are you writing this for another game?
Yeah, it's a comic series, so it's a comic version of the world. They haven't announced anything like what the story is about. I probably can't talk about it yet, but
sure.
It's if people are fans of the game, it's going to surprise them what we're doing. I didn't want to do something that everyone would expect because that's just not interesting to me. So we're doing something with the story that I think it'll be familiar, but like it'll totally reverse the game as far as how the story is being told and everything. So I think people will. It'd be pretty surprised when we announced what it's about.
Right. Because like I said, I've always a fan of the series. Mm-hmm. I was never a fan of the story, I mean, as far as the game goes.
Right.
So getting to see something else other than what we normally get in a Gears of War game would be kind of fun.
Yeah, and I think the Gears of War actually has a pretty interesting mythology. Like, there's a really interesting, mythology and history to it. So, I mean, there's lots of things you can do with it, so I'm just going to try to make it really weird and awkward and violent.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. So how long is that run for?
I think it's going to be 3 miniseries.
Oh, wow.
As far as I understand it, and I don't know the timeline on it. Mm-hmm. This arc that I'm working on right now comes out in January.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So this January we can look for that. Do we have a title yet, or is it just Gears of War?
Just Gears of War for now. I do have a title for it, but yeah.
Of course, you can't talk about it.
How many covers are there going to be?
Gears of War.
I don't know.
Rats.
30 different variant covers.
All
that I have no control over, but probably.
When can we expect the next issue of Rat Queens?
So we have the Orc Dave special coming out this month.
Woo!
And then we have...
Highly anticipated.
It is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That cover art is very enticing. Orc Dave is looking tasty.
Orc Dave is looking fine. Fiona draws a great Orc Dave. That actually all came about. Fiona Staples, a friend of mine, and when I teased it online, I said, because I posted this piece that Fiona did years ago as fan art, and it's basically just Orc Dave. You can probably find it online. It's Orc Dave, kind of a behind shot of his very bulbous ass and like muscular body, and then like the bluebirds just kind of hanging out. And like when she posted that a few years ago, people went crazy. So I reposted the picture, and I was like, who'd be up for an Orc Dave one shot? And I posted that, and people were going crazy, like, yeah, I'd love to see a book like that. And then I kind of retweeted and I said to Fiona, I was like, you know, maybe if it happened, you'd do a new cover. And she's like, yep. So I was like, all right. And I was like, I emailed Jim Valentino at my publisher, and I was like, this is kind of what I'd like to do. Are you okay with it? He's like, yep, let's do it. So it all kind of just came from a kind of a Twitter joke.
Yeah, like I said, I had a Fiona Staples variant cover of Rat Queens number one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's done work for me. Like, she's done that cover, and then she does
that's an incredible cover.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And so, yeah, it's the cover of the trade. Yeah.
How many issues are we in for Rat Queens now?
We're at issue 5 of the second
21.
Series.
So you didn't 16, really cover this 16. Too much, but they were. The first run was 15. Well,
first
16
one run
issues.
Was 16 issues.
15 issues.
15 coherent issues.
He doesn't acknowledge the 16th issue.
Well, it's a super secret 17 one that I want.
If you can find that single, then.
So the trade there is a trade for those first 16.
Yes, there is.
First 15.
The 16th issue doesn't make it into the trades. They restarted recently with the number one year.
Yeah. Got so it. There's three trades so far, and then we started again with the new numbering of. With Owen Jenny on art, started in March. Wow. So we have Orc Dave coming up this month, and then next month the trade comes out that collects all of Owen's first 5 issues, and then November we're back with a new arc called The Giant Colossal Magic Nothing, I think.
Next time we have you on, or another comic book guy, I gotta know how this numbering works.
You know what? I really
age of the reboot,
one,
baby.
Two.
It's sequential, and then it goes back on itself again.
It doesn't seem
it goes back to like McFarlane releasing Spawn like 18, 25, 21, 30. Like he just released what was
he
done.
He just released them out of order. We're talking about like number ones happening.
Yeah, so like the thing was when we.
Reboot!
We. Didn't really. It was kind of hard because with issue 16, the artist who had worked on that, we parted ways, and I didn't want to finish that storyline. I wasn't happy with the storyline at all. I actually didn't know what to do with the series anymore, and I probably should have stopped writing before the third volume. But we already did that 16th issue, so Owen came on. And it was like, well, do we start with 17? And it's not going to be connected to that 16th issue. Like, I wanted to restart the story. So it'd be super confusing on that level. People are like, I'm reading issue 17, but, like, issue 16. We're treating it like issue 16 didn't happen.
Gotcha.
So we are kind of doing that anyway with the renumbering. But then it's like, it's a number one. So you at least understand that it's a new story. And even if right now it's not connected to what came before, like, it's still its own... You know, a brand new story, but it will eventually like connect. But otherwise, it was too convoluted to try to just start with number 17. And
so we went back to
just started over. And honestly, the series needed it just like a fresh, not just for just to like make things a little bit clearer, but for me creatively, I just like I needed to take the time off. And
sure,
cause the honest truth is, I hated working on it for a long time.
Really? Wow.
I hated it, and so I needed to just be like. Why did I like writing this in the first place? So I took a break, and I reread it, and I just tried to kind of get in touch with what was it about the series that I loved writing, and figuring that out led to what I've been writing now in the series.
Wow,
nice.
So
which has been selling as strong as ever for Rat Queens.
Yeah, it was a big concern that like renumbering it and coming back with another artist. I fully expected it not to come back for very long.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And our number one, new number one, sold more than the original
mm-hmm.
number one. And our sales have been higher than they were for the third volume. So
we sell out of them. I had to hide all those books that you signed today.
Yeah, I kept pushing. I'm like, oh, wait, where are all the books? I didn't realize you hit them all.
All I'm hearing is that I need a copy of number 16. That's all I can
do. That's a super secret.
Yeah, that's all I'm hearing.
You have to talk to me later on. Yes. I might have a sign.
Oh, Travis man, hoarded them all. That's all I'm hearing.
There's also probably a lot of them in my shredder.
So the thing you want, though, is the bag. Script for okay. 17.
Yeah. Yeah.
That will make so much sense.
No, that's great. Keep putting the 16s in your shredder. That's it. I'll get that copy from you.
More valuable.
No, you won't. That goes my vault, my speculation vault that Alika hates.
Well, Bob.
It's in that your speculation vault is a white box over there to Mark Travis.
No, that's the ones I read.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
Okay.
Before we get out of here, yeah. Mr. Weeb, where can we find you? Are you a social media guy?
Unfortunately, yeah. I'm very jaded, and I mostly hate social media. In fact, I have this conversation quite often mm-hmm. that I really don't think creators should be on social media, but that's another story. I'm still there. Still there.
Right. You don't want to be there, but you're forced to be
there. The hypocrisy
as
is
I was,
right
as I was
right
yelling at all of you like I was drunk, saying, stay out of my feeds, America. But anyway,
get off my lawn, America.
Yeah, basically. So I'm on Twitter at Curtis J. Weeb, and I'm on Instagram, I think, as just Curtis Weeb, I think. But Instagram is kind of where I post most of my stuff. Right. It's a little bit more personal. On Twitter, I post, like, I don't even know. I don't really post on there anymore. I never use it. I just use it to, like, say,
that's
hey.
Where he tells other writers to fuck off.
Yeah.
Set up interviews with Patrick Rothfuss.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, let's play games for 3 hours.
I do. Actually, weirdly, I think that's honestly the only reason I'm on social media is because I can, like talk with other people in, like, creative industry. That's it. Like, I tweeted at the showrunner for Dark Matter, just to be like, hey, sorry your show got canceled, hope things are good. And he's like, oh, hey, I love Rat Queens. I'm like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. let's talk.
Oh, I see.
Well, I was going to say, a showrunner, Rat Queens, and then you...
Dun, dun,
I'm
dun,
like,
dun,
dun. Dark Matter just got canceled.
It's interesting.
That would be Rat Queens a sci-fi show.
For as much as you hate social media, you like the affirmation.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
That's exactly why everybody's on social media. It's just instantaneous.
What do you have any convention appearances coming up either?
I have when I get back from my little vacation here, I'm going out to, this is not going to make sense to anyone who listens to this podcast, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Oh,
I know where that is. I've heard
do you really?
Convention, yeah.
Oh,
Saskatchewan in Saskatoon.
Yeah,
many times.
Yeah, and I'll do a show there, and then I'm doing a show called Shucks. SHUX in Vancouver, which is a massive gaming convention. That's their first year. They it's run by the guys who do the Shut Up and Sit Down show.
Is that like Canadian PAX?
Canadian PAX is PAX Prime.
Canadian PAX is Shucks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm doing that, and then I'm actually not really doing shows anymore. I'll do like one or two a year.
Do you go to Emerald City at all anymore?
I did last year, but I'm not going anymore. It's too expensive. It's turning into San Diego-esque expensive, and it's a great show, don't get me wrong, but it's not what it was.
So Maui Comic-Con from here on out. Right. Gotcha.
I'm down for that.
I know this really super small show that you can do.
Hey, I just did a show a week and a half, or 2 weeks ago.
He said he was in the boobies.
I was in Whitehorse in the Yukon.
Wow.
In Northern Canada. And that was a very small show. I think there might have been 200 or 300 people there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's a guy who stumbled in from the street and his booth is by the door and the guy goes, what the fuck is this?
Well, that one was a little bit bigger. That was in Vancouver, but yeah. But I actually like the smaller shows, to be honest. It's a little bit more laid back. Yeah.
I've been enjoying the small show thing where the fans get to interact with it. Because the bigger cons start to be about movie stars and TV stars and personalities and this and that. But the smaller cons that go back to the root of it where, you know, comics are kind of the reason for the season.
Yep.
And that you get to be up close with the creators of the comics you enjoy, so it's fans interacting directly. And
yeah.
I think that's a really experience that both people enjoy. The creators also enjoy meeting the actual fans, you know?
Right, right.
And not just the speculators with 100 books.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's like one of these, you're the writer of Rat Queens? Wait. You're the writer?
Actually, no, it's funny. This is
thought you'd be 7 feet tall. Yeah.
The thing about the
I
thing
thought
about
you'd look like Orc Dave.
I
you
wish.
Don't even know what Orc Dave
I
looks
wish.
Like.
I know.
I've seen the cover.
Actually, it's funny. The Rat Queens is this thing, and I think, you know, Rat Queens has had its like troubles with schedules, and it's been a constant chaos. It's managed to survive all of that because the title is way bigger than anyone who creates it. Yeah. And it's not a brag, it's just a reality, and it's had its perks and its disadvantages. Like, new stuff that I do just doesn't sell comparatively. Like, just because it's not, people don't go there thinking this is like Curtis Weaves' book. They go there because they know those four characters. It's kind of become its own in a much smaller capacity. Mm-hmm. Like Spider-Man, people buy Spider-Man don't really care who's writing it for the most part. Like the you know, the main audience doesn't really care that much, and that's kind of what like what Ragnar has been. Yeah.
You mentioned Dark Matter earlier. What do you think about it? Was originally a comic to get the money to make a TV show.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh. Yeah.
That's very common, though, now. That, and in fact, I've been in a few meetings for television stuff that it's like, if I've had a pitch, it's like, you know what we should really do? This is a really great idea, but why don't we make a comic first, and then we'll see if we can get it made into a TV show. I'm like, I'm not here to pitch a comic book. I'm here to pitch a television show. I already do comic books. Like, well, then we can do them. I'm like, you don't get it.
Oh, man, I wish we had another hour because I wanted to talk about your cool Whoopi Goldberg comic idea.
My Cronenberg menopause book?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that and your television stuff, but we can't. I know you got to get out of here, but...
Well, let me tell you one thing.
What?
I have an email from Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, wow.
I love me some Kevin Sorbo. What did he want from Mr. Weeb?
Well, that'll be for another time, my friend.
He's going to play Orc Dave.
Well, Mr. Weeb, has been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening. There's one last question I want to ask. Is there anything that you're reading right now that is inspiring your work or are you enjoying right now?
Not necessarily inspiring my work, but I've been sharing the gospel of Junji Ito. And I suggest everyone go check out his stuff because he's a master, an absolute master. He does manga. It's basically manga horror. And he's this crazy, amazing mind that a lot of his stuff deals with human compulsion. And it's amazing. You can tell that he thinks humans are just disgusting mess of a creature. He's a dentist.
Can you spell his name?
And he's a dentist. That's actually what his day job is, which is pretty
nice.
Funny. It's J-U-N-J-I and then Ito is I-T-O. If you want to check out his seminal work that most people know is called Uzumaki, which is all about this man in this small coastal Japanese town that becomes obsessed with spirals, and it's this obsession that slowly starts to take hold of everybody in this town, and they all start seeing and like witnessing spirals everywhere they go. It's a masterwork. It's amazing.
Wow, check that out. Well, Mr. Weeb, you have been an absolute pleasure, sir.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. Once again, yes. Where can we find you on social media if you want to take a look at your stuff?
At Curtis J. Weeb on Twitter and just Curtis Weeb on Instagram.
Well, fantastic. We certainly appreciate you coming to the store and gracing us with your presence here on the lovely island of Maui. I'm so glad you could bring the family as well. I hope you guys have a wonderful stay while you're still here. And then please come by and visit. And if I may say so myself, once again, October 28th and 29th, Maui Comic Con 2017. So, just to let you know. So,
I'm trying to get him for 2018.
Oh, okay.
Give him some time to recoup.
All right.
I don't think he's going to have time. That's like
just check. I was just
7 weeks away.
I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Just don't go back.
Email everything
until November.
You can carry me for 2 months.
Yeah, you can crash at all of our houses for a week.
Probably not going to enjoy
my wife will love that.
Sure, she will. All right, well, we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys enjoyed our interview with Mr. Curtis Weeb.
I guess
you guys did a fantastic
job. Bring on the back tattoo.
Yeah. That's coming up after the show. That's what we're all staying for.
Looks like a mermaid.
So for Todd, for Travis, for Format, for Alika, for myself, G Money, and for the man of the hour, Mr. Curtis Weeb, big round of applause.
Thank you. Yeah.
Until next time, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next Nerd Watch, we say to you guys, all aloha.